EFTN Fast Break Podcast, Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. What is going on, everybody? Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawhisenberg DFS, joined once again by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer, decked out with my favorite combo of Adam swag here with the Ducks hat, the Ken Griffey shirt. Adam, Happy New Year, man. How was it?
Happy New Year. Yeah, apparently I wore this for you. But no, when you said the date, it took me back to like when I was in school and you would go back to school after New Year's, and it took me a week to write the correct date at the top of my paper.
Right.
And
every that's paper, maybe yeah, what I just thought. Corner.
Yeah. Always.
I think this is the first time I have actually said a date or thought about a date. I didn't write anything down on my paper yesterday, you know. So but yeah, man, and like speaking of turning to 2025, I would like a do-over on day one of the year from a props and DFS perspective, dude. Like, Miles McBride was a late scratch on Wednesday.
Getting right into it. Love it.
Dude, right into it. This is the fast break here. We're off and running. So Jalen Brunson was questionable coming into the day, then a game-time decision, then ultimately ruled out. It was the first time this season he has missed a game. So us DFS players, right, we're chomping at the bit. It's Deuce McBride night. Super cheap on both sides. He's in every single one of my lineups, and I think a lot of other players did the same, as they should have. He's announced as a starter, both by beat reporters and then by the team. And then when they get to the actual starting lineups in Madison Square Garden, oh, Cameron Payne is announced as the starting point guard. 10, 15 minutes later, news comes out. Miles McBride suffered a hamstring injury in warm-ups. So, again, I would like a do-over. I do want to talk about some other Knicks stuff here, but I had to get that off my chest first. When you have a guy locked into all of your lineups, Adam, on the first day of the year, and he gets late scratched, it's just a tough way to start 2025.
Yeah, you definitely file that under things you don't like to see.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that team right now is rolling, so I'm sure they're not, obviously, you want Brunson out there, but yeah, that's a tough pill for sure to start the year. And I saw it on Twitter too, and I was like, because it was obviously on New Year's Day, I guess the evening, and just it feels like that happens 5-6 times every NBA season, and happen on the first day of the new year is a little bit worse, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, like, look, you file that under things that you hate to see. When you open up that file cabinet for things you love to see, I think it is the New York Knicks in general, right? Winners of 9 straight now, just a half game back of the Boston Celtics for the 2 seed out East. And in that game last night against the Jazz, Josh Hart, first career back-to-back triple doubles, now has 10 triple doubles in his career, all of them with the New York Knicks. Karl-Anthony Towns continues his romp through the Eastern Conference, 31 points, 21 rebounds against Utah. He is the first Knicks player with multiple 30-20 games in a season since Patrick Ewing did it in 1989-1990. Knicks 14-2 since November 29th, second best record in the league since that date, only behind Oklahoma City's 13-1. And that's 13-2, really, for Oklahoma City with the tournament game loss in the final there. So the Knicks, man, like, it is all coming together. And, of course, they didn't need Brunson or Deuce to take care of the lowly Jazz last night. But they have kind of slowly but surely, I think, transformed into the team or progressed into the team that we all thought and hoped they could be, especially Knicks fans. They got to be jazzed right now. How are you looking at the Knicks through this hot streak? And again, like, if you want to, Adam, we can also work in some Cavs talk because the Cavs have a 5-game buffer now in the East, and the Knicks are our big-time competition for your favorite team. So Knicks talk, Cavs, Celtics, top of the East is really fun right now.
Yeah, the Brunson-Cat duo offensively has actually probably been better than I even thought. They've pretty much been, like, top-tier offense, but conversely, they've been still struggling defensively despite having those wings with OG and Bridges. I do think they are going to, like, from watching them, like, there is plenty of moments where their offense just, there's no movement. And that's part of it. Like, Brunson last year, they were such a heliocentric offense in, like, the Luka style. And it's a little bit less so with Cat being there now, because at this time last year, it was, you know, Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein, guys you don't run your offense right through. But there will be some times where their offense is super stagnant, but that will be less worrisome because you have two of the 20 best offensive players in the league. And Bridges, too, has quietly been having a lot better production offense. So he had that huge game against, your San Antonio Spurs on Christmas. And I think they've gotten some really good minutes from Precious Achiuwa since he's been back, too, which has been important for them. So, yeah, for me, they've been really impressive. The defense is still something you have to worry about. But right now, they clearly look like not only the clear third-best team in the East, but a team that can, you know, clearly they're right behind Boston. I mean, what I'll say about the Cavs, they're, like, just dismantling teams at this point. Like, we talked about this before we hopped on the podcast. You step away for 5 minutes, and the Cavs are on an 18-2 run. And it's, again, I talked about it last week when we did the All-Star reserves. Mobley deserves as much credit as anybody because his, you know, I mentioned how Bam for in Miami, right, gets a defensive rebound, brings the ball up. We're seeing a lot more of that from Mobley.
Yeah.
He's attacking mismatches way more. And I think his first couple years in the league, like 70+% of his baskets were assisted on, which makes sense. A lot of them dunks, lobs from Garland, Mitchell, et cetera. It's like 10% lower this year, which tells me he's doing more offensively. He's got more, in his bag on offense. And then, we saw what Ty Jerome hasn't been as huge of the rotation lately as he was in the beginning of the season. But he's been consistent for them off the bench. They're just quietly like so deep. So I don't think anybody can believe it's. We're at the point now where they're 29. They played 33 games. They've won 29 of them. Like, I don't think you can say it's a fluke. And then Boston, we know, is going to be right there as well. The only thing I want to mention is, will a team like Philadelphia get up there? Not to that level, but they're playing a lot better lately. Finally seeing consistent games from their top three players. Still think they're missing somebody off that bench without McCain, mm-hmm. who was obviously starting and then he got hurt, but like, they've been interested in Lonnie Walker. Could they bring in, like, somebody? But it's good to see them playing better. And the overall East is looking a lot better, especially once we get somebody, some sort of relevance for injuries in Orlando. Because that top six, I think you could say, is still going to be really good. And then who knows where Jimmy Butler is going to be. So,
yeah, I mean, and, like, the Magic are the 4 seed. About a 5-game gap between them and the Knicks and Celtics with the 2-3. But, like, to still be in the 4 seed now, with Paolo Banchero's injury designation on the injury report changing from the oblique injury to return to play conditioning or return to competition, whatever they title it as, like, he is working his way back now. You would imagine Franz is a few weeks behind him. So, like, the fact that they have tread water this long, it's gonna be a fun.
And I'm telling you, like, I talked about this a lot too. Like, you don't like having Paolo and Franz out, but Jalen Suggs' confidence offensively during this stretch has been, he's having some huge games. And when they're in the playoffs and all of a sudden they're struggling on offense, like, Jalen Suggs is probably gonna be a lot more comfortable, a lot more confident on offense. So, and then Goga's been quietly one of the best players, like, not one of the best players, but, like, one of the most underrated good players in the league this season. He's been awesome.
He's another big reason why they have been able to keep this above 500, right? I mean, 4-6 in their last 10, but it could be so much worse. Like, what we did maybe envision when Franz went down and we were still missing Paolo without a return date, right? Like, he could have seen them falling a lot further than they have. And, like, okay, I sit here and moan and complain about the DFS disappointments on Wednesday night, but, like, the actual disappointment around the NBA was the injury suffered by Jaden Ivey against those Magic on Wednesday night. He's chasing a loose ball, so's Cole Anthony, and Cole Anthony dives for the ball, hits Jaden Ivey in the leg. Ivey ends up being stretchered off the floor. last night, I, you know, I saw some Twitter doctors out there saying they thought it could be a fractured and or dislocated ankle. But then Shams gives us the actual report here on Thursday morning. It's a broken fibula. So I believe I saw that they said he will miss most of the rest of the regular season. I'm kind of surprised that we don't just have him ruled out for the rest of the year, because we are about 3 months and some change away from the end of the regular season. And again, you mentioned that Cavs record, right? We are rapidly approaching the halfway mark that we'll hit here in a couple weeks. So that was, I gotta tell you, man, I am like relatively squeamish when it comes to like catastrophic injuries. Seen a couple like in person in my real life of like leg bones pointing, like breaking out the skin, things like that. So I did not watch this until this morning. I thought it was going to be worse. That doesn't mean it's, you know, any better for Ivy, the Pistons, or anybody. And it wasn't just the Pistons who were shaken up about this. Like Cole Anthony himself, of course, there's fans out there saying he was being too reckless. And like, I don't.
Jaden Ivy himself tweeted today or yesterday,
it was a basketball play.
Yeah, he said Cole Anthony. I think he said like he's a great kid. It was awesome to see Jaden Ivy do that. But anybody that. That's why I feel so bad. Like CJ Stroud, when Tank Dell got hurt against the Chiefs, like he was, again, not his fault. Nobody's fault. Right. Not the receiver's fault that ran into him. These things just unfortunately happen when you have, you know, collisions and stuff like that in sports. But my heart all obviously goes out to the players that actually get hurt, but it also goes out to the players that have, you know, in some sort of way an impact on it. And it's, you know, it's nobody's fault. It's just these things happen. And it sucks because Jaden Ivey was with Cade Cunningham. Like they were making the Pistons really fun to watch. They weren't a contending team by any means, but they were a super fun team to watch this season. And obviously, like, you know, you just hope he's good to go for next season because his team's future is quietly getting a little bit brighter each year. And Ivey was, you know, as much of a part of that as anybody outside of maybe Cade.
I mean, these guys are right in the thick of the play-in right now, sitting in the nine seed out east. And like with Cole Anthony, right? What was it, reckless? Sure. Ill intent? No way.
Of course
not. No way. So just kind of one of those things that happens sometimes when everybody's out there playing hard, we're diving after loose balls and the like. You know, and I think from actually watching the replay now here this morning, because I didn't have eyes on the game, I heard about the injury, stretchered off. I didn't really want to see it at the time. But like, I think it could have been worse if his leg was planted and we could have had ligament damage. We could have had this and that. So I think like all things considered, it could have been worse. Like just watching the replay, not a doctor, but I've seen my fair share of injuries like that. The fact his leg wasn't planted feels a little bit fortunate.
Yeah. Just, hopefully he can get back, you know, as quick as possible. And yeah, you just feel for him.
All right, like turning it back to a little bit of a positive here and moving to the West. The Denver Nuggets are heating up here, Adam. They have won 3 straight. They have vaulted themselves. As we know, like if anybody, almost anybody in the West wins 3 in a row right now, you're going to rocket up the standings. They are sitting in fourth at 19-13, like I said, winners of 3 straight, 7 of their last 10. And you know who's been a huge catalyst? Like, of course, Nikola Jokic is the centerpiece of everything that this team does. But Russell Westbrook has moved into the starting lineup with Aaron Gordon out injured. And the Nuggets are now 9-2 on the season with Russ in the starting lineup and 11-2 when he plays 30 or more minutes. So like, I think Russ is a talking point with the recent Nuggets success, and like he has built chemistry not only with Jokic, but members of the second unit. Now he's integrated into this starting group. And then of course, Jokic himself, like we can't have the Nuggets conversation without talking about the most recent ridiculous record-breaking stats
that
Nikola Jokic set against the Hawks last night on Wednesday. He becomes the first player in NBA history to record 20 points, 15 boards, and 15 assists in less than 30 minutes. And courtesy of the Nuggets broadcast last night, Adam, 40% of his triple-doubles have come before the fourth quarter.
That's insane.
He's also still leading the league in three-point percentage, 49.2%, 4.6 attempts per game. It's not like this guy is not shooting a high volume of threes, especially for him. I do think you look ahead at the schedule here. For the Nuggets, January as a whole, including last night's game, 17 games in 31 days. And a lot, like, the schedule kind of ramps up now that we have passed NBA Christmas. We have passed the NBA Cup, where we had a little bit more of a start and stop type of schedule for some of these teams. But in the remaining 16 games, this weekend, they play a back-to-back, home against the Spurs, road against the Spurs. As long as Victor Wembanyama plays in both of those games, those are tough. We saw the Spurs play them tough shorthanded last year when the Nuggets were fighting for the one seed. They also host Boston this month. They go twice on the road to Dallas, right? They're not going to have Luka there. Mavs are still playing tough. They host Houston. They go on the road to play the Timberwolves. They go on the road to play the Knicks. So I think January is a huge test. We're going to see how sustainable this iteration of the Nuggets are. And I don't know, man. I'm not going to bet against Jokic. So I'm throwing a lot at you there, spewing out Westbrook, Jokic, and Nuggets' upcoming schedule. Where do you want to start? Because, again, this is fun to see, man. I like Russell Westbrook. Is he the best player at all times? No. But, like, I am enjoying seeing him kind of figuring things out alongside the best player in the world.
Yeah, and I think when Westbrook went to Denver, a lot of talk was like, how does he really fit with Jokic? It's kind of an awkward fit. And between that and Jamal Murray's kind of down season and the fact that, look, the dribble handoff pairing between Jokic and Jamal Murray just hasn't been the same this season, what's been the difference? And it's been, this team's playing fast. Like, and it's weird because last year Denver was bottom five in pace. This year they're fifth in pace. They're averaging seven more transition points per game this season. Christian Brown is top five in transition points per game. He's probably been their third or fourth best player this season. And yes, Jokic is still dominating the league in touches per game, and his numbers each day is just like, what nonsense video game type shit is he going to post next? And I still remember back to the first episode we did this season when it was me and you, we were like, oh, Russ has been terrible. His on-off splits are terrible. And that's clearly a thing of the past because he's been awesome. He is kind of fit with, like, the, especially without Aaron Gordon, that kind of off-ball cutting presence. Defensively, like, he's still going to be really, really engaged and active. If he hits a three in a given game, just say thanks and move on. But the transition, I think, for Denver in terms of their pace of play and how they're getting out on the break has been a lot more fun to watch this season. It's a good job by Michael Malone and the coaching staff and Jokic and everybody adjusting, because this is a team that were towards the bottom of the league in pace for years with Jokic. And it makes sense because they play through him in the post and everything like that. But literally seven more transition points per game, top five in pace after being bottom five last season. And of course, the handful of seasons before that. So when your second best player is struggling like he is, you have to adjust. And I think Russ deserves a ton of credit for not just probably exceeding expectations, but playing as well as he has.
Yeah, and I think everything you said there, I second. Like, you also do need to credit, like you suggested, you credit the coaching staff and what Michael Malone has done to make adjustments with the personnel shortcomings that he probably perceived at the beginning of the year. Like, losing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was a big loss for this team. Aaron Gordon has been in and out of the lineup and is currently out for an extended period of time. So, like, you mentioned the pace, right? Nuggets are third in points per game this season. And you look at the other teams up there in the top, you know, seven or eight in terms of points per game, like 117.6 allowed. That does stand out from, like, Memphis, only 114. Cleveland, only 110. Like, the point differentials for some of those other teams, like Boston is up there as well. Those are the top four. Like, they stand out in a negative way there. So, like, I don't think we have Denver up in that top echelon of teams still. Like, I think they are maybe a trade or two
away. I was going to say, we still believe they have to make a trade, right?
I do, yes. I do not think that this iteration, like, I'm never going to count Jokic out.
Right.
But, like, we saw this team be vulnerable last year, again, to a certain type of roster build with what the Wolves had last season.
Like, just for example, like, they've played, obviously, you know, I think of it vividly because it's my favorite team, but they've played twice against Cleveland this season. Jokic put up the same video game numbers, and the games weren't even really competitive.
Yeah.
Like, those teams, like the Thunders, the Cavs, the Celtics of the world, like, those teams in a seven-game series, like, Jokic can do all he can, but, like, if... I just don't think they're at that same level. And does a Zach LaVine trade put them to that level? I don't think so, but they have to do something. Maybe it's not Zach LaVine. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's Cam Johnson or somebody, but they have to do something.
You know, I had that Cam Johnson trade to the Nuggets in that trade machine episode.
We can't be Dorian Finney-Smith now. He's not available anymore, so.
Absolutely.
Did you guys talk about that trade? You guys talked about that trade on Monday, right?
We talked about it on Monday. Did you have any additional thoughts?
No, I was just going to ask what you guys thought of it. I just think it's crazy, the D'Angelo Russell roller coaster.
Yeah, right back in Brooklyn here. I think for the Lakers, like, just to reiterate what Mike and I talked about on Monday, like, I think it is an upgrade. Does it really raise the Lakers up in my eyes in terms of their Western Conference contention? Not totally. But to bring Dorian Finney-Smith, who is shooting a career high from three, bring him into this Lakers team without giving up one of their first round picks. Like, yeah. I do think it was a positive move in the right direction.
And Reeves has been balling since they traded Russell. Yeah. He's been insane.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has. So games coming up this weekend. Here on Thursday night, we've just got six. And for me, the very clear game that will be on my television tonight is the Celtics at the Timberwolves. Celtics questionable Porzingis and Jaylen Brown coming into this one. I do think somebody sits. They will take on the Rockets tomorrow night, where Boston at Houston will also be on my TV screen on Friday. But I've got two games on Friday, additional games that I have my eyes on. First, I mentioned it earlier when we were talking about Denver's upcoming schedule. They host the Spurs. So Wimby and Jokic, like, and I would argue that those are the two best players in the league right now. That's must-watch TV for me.
I finally have an answer, by the way.
Okay, what's your answer?
I'm putting Shea second at this point.
Okay, look, and that's totally fair. I am a little bit biased, even I can admit that. But I think I could also make and win an argument to put Wimby over Shea. But this other game that's coming up, speaking of Shea, the Thunder host the Knicks. So we get Isaiah Hartenstein against his old team, so I am interested in that. Outside of the fact that that should be a phenomenal game in the first place. So very excited for our Friday night slate on Saturday. I mentioned it's a back-to-back. So Jokic and Wimby part two, this time in San Antonio. I will say, like, this is my stock down. I'll just do it early. Stock down to the league for the schedule congestion that we have. We're going to make these teams play, and I know it doesn't affect the Nuggets as much because their bodies are more acclimated to it, but we're going to make these guys play in Denver at elevation on Friday night and turn around 21 and a half hours later after that game, like 20 and a half hours after that game concludes. These two teams tip off in San Antonio. It does not make sense to me, but that is the NBA. Then the game that I really want to watch outside of that on Saturday, Hawks at Clippers. My boy, Adam, Kawhi's debut. Look, I'm sure we get, 16 minutes out of
him? I was literally going to say over under 16 and a half minutes.
I will take the slight under there. But I am very excited to see if Kawhi is anywhere close to what we saw when he went out last season. Because again, like, the Clippers are a competitive team that is very much in the mix for a Western Conference playoff spot, and they have done that without their best player. Again, assuming he still is, I think he will be. We'll see Kawhi on Saturday and then Sunday. Not a great slate of games, save for one. Why is this 2:30 Central on a Sunday? On week 18 Sunday, Adam, Boston at OKC. Must watch.
Maybe they know that there's really only like four NFL games that actually matter this week.
Yeah.
So look, I might watch that game instead of some football, let's be honest. Like, there's... Yeah. Like, the Bills, Josh Allen's going to take two snaps and continue his consecutive game streak, right. And then he and the starters are coming out. I don't really have to watch the Bills. Fantasy football season is over unless you are an absolute psycho playing in Week 18 for the championship. Yeah, I mean, Boston OKC, I'll probably try to watch that.
All right, well, I gave you my stock down there, making the Nuggets and Spurs play less than 24 hours apart, multiple states apart. So what's your stock down here on episode 34?
Yeah, so haven't been able to watch a ton of this team, but I was able to because they were playing Philadelphia on Monday, and I'm in the PA area, so they were obviously on TV. Portland, Scoot Henderson is not very good. I just, it's really unfortunate, but I'm watching that game, and he has like a possession, like six possessions in a row where he has like four turnovers in that span. He is shooting under 40% from the field. He's just, like, on a team that's as bad as Portland, and it's, let's be, like, they don't have bad players. Like, they have a bad roster, but, like, he's, like, maybe their fifth best player. It's, like, Ayton, Denny, Simons, Jeremy Grant when healthy, and I like Tamani Kamara. Scoot Henderson should not be your fifth best player with the hype he had coming out and everything like that. Just watching him, it's like he just doesn't look good. And obviously, like, and I didn't mention Shaedon Sharpe. So what is he, like, their sixth best player?
If that. I would say seventh.
So Grant when healthy, Ayton, Simons, that's three. Kamara, Sharpe is five, Denny's six.
Yeah. And, like, again, like, would I take Scoot over some of those guys
for the future, right?
Because he's 20 and I think he can still.
And maybe I'm being too harsh, and I hope he, this is just like.
I don't think you are, though. I don't think you are if you're looking at it in the prism of, like, right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a good player.
Right.
And it's just weird. Like, again, we were talking before we hit record here. It's like, if we're trying to win a game today, are you taking Scoot Henderson or Tumani freaking Kamara, man, who was a second-round pick, right, in that same draft?
It's not even close.
It's not close, and it's one of my, like, again, like, I know I'm not alone here, and I know Mike Randall was on Scoot over Brandon Miller with me before that draft, but, like, I admitted I was wrong at the end of last season, and Scoot has done really nothing to change my mood on that. It's unfortunate, man, because I was very excited for him coming out of the G League Ignite 2 years ago. Anything else for you on that? Because I'm excited for our stock ups here, dude. You started this.
No, it's just been disappointing. And again, he's only 20, so let's hope this is just, you know, a stretch where he's struggling, and maybe a year from now we're looking at him maybe close to how we view Brandon Miller. I don't know if it'll get to that point, but still obviously incredibly young. So hopefully he bounces back. But it's been really bad. And I really, the first time I got to sit down to watch a full game of Portland, and just came away really disappointed.
All right, closing out episode 34 with our stock ups. And warning, double Spurs stock up here.
So that's my fault, Adam too.
Start.
It's my fault.
Yeah, so what's your Spurs stock up here on episode 34?
Yeah. Victor Wembanyama for nothing he did on the court. Tweets last week that he's going to play chess. Was it Washington Square? Washington.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Hey, I'm going to play chess. Anybody wanna come up and meet?" Terrible weather. It's like raining. It's like 35 degrees, and he's out there playing chess with fans. And I thought that was awesome. Just putting it out there and going to play some chess. I wonder if he won those games. I'm sure he did. I used to play chess all the time. Chess is actually insanely fun. And it's like super cool to have the strategic mindset. And it's just like you're so hyper focused on everything. But that was dope to see. So Wemby stock up. Go to play some chess with the fans on a cold and rainy day.
Yeah. I believe it was a 1-2 record. I think he said he played his brother and won. And then he played two, like, pros who hang out in the park there and lost both of those.
Oh, matches. He's playing pros.
But, yeah, I think. But, yeah, I agree. That was pretty cool to see. And he did say after, I believe, that he wants to have, like, an NBA players chess tournament. And, like, you know, not to be insensitive here or anything, but what's the roster for that chess tournament? Seven players or something like that? I'm not giving the guys enough credit. I'm sure there's plenty of chess players around the association, but my stock up here on our very Spurs edition of Stock Up, Stock Down, my stock up is to Spurs general manager Brian right, because I could obviously go on for a lot longer about all of the moves he's made leading up to them tanking for Wimby and what he's done after. And I actually want to focus on what he's done after, in particular, this past offseason. We knew that on paper, getting Chris Paul, getting Harrison Barnes in here as some veteran leadership for what was the second youngest, or actually by the end of last season, I believe the youngest team in the NBA. This team is over 500, Adam, at New Year's Day for the first time since 2019. And Chris Paul has assisted Victor Wembanyama 79 times, which is the second most in the NBA. Do you off the top of your head know who the top pairing is? It is a pairing that you have talked about multiple times on this podcast this season.
It's Harden and Zubac.
I believe it's Trae Young and Jalen Johnson.
Was Harden and Zubac, I think.
Yeah, they may be third. But yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting considering
that was going to be my, I knew it was those two. I just didn't know if it was switched because I believe at one point it was definitely Harden and Zubac number one.
I think I remember you bringing that up at the beginning of the season when we were talking about the Clippers early season success. But so then like you break those numbers down even further, Chris Paul has assisted 41 times to Wembanyama for three, which is the most in the NBA, and for 199 total points. That is also first in the NBA.
And then for Harrison Barnes, 7 million miles of distance, too, apparently.
Yeah.
For each three.
Yeah. And then Harrison Barnes, career high, 42.5% from three. So shout out, stock up, Brian Wright. And man, does like.
I was going to ask you,
is kind of important to this team right now.
I was going to ask, is Harrison Barnes a member of the Spurs by the deadline?
I do think it's more likely that he would move than Chris Paul.
Yeah.
I
think Chris Paul likes it there. I think he's having fun. Let's
go a little bit more. Let's dive just one circle deeper into Spurs hell for you here. Do you think it's a non-zero chance that Chris Paul could end up joining the Spurs coaching staff? Because I think it's a non-zero chance. Maybe even being the head coach.
Head coach would be wild.
I know. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, they really tried to get Duncan in there to do something like that, and he balked at it. And, again, I don't think I've seen or heard any indication from Chris Paul that he wants to be an NBA head coach, but like, I just know that obviously I try to ingest all the Spurs content I can. And Pop over the years has spoken so highly of Chris Paul and the way he thinks the game and the way he leads a team and executes on the floor. I just kind of had that thought pop into my head over the last week or so is like, could he join the coaching staff? Cause they've had players of lesser stature in the past. Gorgie Jang, right? Ime Udoka got his coaching start with the Spurs. I can name some other names too, and we're talking too much about the Spurs here, but I had that thought, and I think it's interesting. Like, he would have to move his family to Texas. Like, there are hurdles to that outside of him, you know, his desire being number one, but something I was thinking about.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure whenever the time is that Pop is done, I'm sure he would try. See if that'd be something he'd be interested in.
Yeah. We'll see how it plays out. Stock up, Wimby playing chess. Stock up, Brian Wright. Got the Spurs over 500 for the first time in 5 years. Anything else for you, Adam, on episode 34 before we shut it down?
I don't think so. Yeah, no Thursday Night Football tonight. So,
yeah. Just, how you feeling, though? Like, I know you're excited to get, like, you know, you can kind of fully get into basketball. You got a Bills playoff run coming up. But, like, we're also, like, we're at the end, right? Like, no more season long, no more huge DFS slates. Like, how are you feeling about this time of year?
I'm actually kind of excited because I do want to, right now I'm at the point now where I can finally, for the most part, just focus on the Bills and the Bills alone football. Obviously, I'm still doing some football content as well, but like, I don't have to worry about as much, you know, the fourth string wide receiver against, you know, this team's slot defensive back and this team's pressure rate. And, you know, so it's fun in that aspect to be able to also shift more towards basketball. And from a straight up fan perspective, I should be excited for the Cavs and the Bills. I just, the PTSD starting to sit in, man. We're getting to the playoffs, and
I get it.
but the Bills have 17, so I think they can beat anybody. As long as they have 17, they can beat anybody.
Look, man, Josh Allen for MVP. I'm with it.
He's going to win.
I'm with it.
I think he's still like the massive betting favorite. So
sure.
He's not going to play, like, obviously this week.
Right.
He's insane. And people ask me all the time, like a lot of my friends, like, why do you care about the MVP so much? It's more about the fact that you guys don't understand how long I have been waiting for a quarterback to just be good on the Bills.
Right.
Let alone a superstar. And now we have a chance to have somebody that's going to win the MVP. Like, that means a lot to me. Like, I was hyped when Josh Allen was on the cover of Madden. So, of course, I wanted to win the MVP award. When you, like I care about the Bills outside of family and friends more than almost anything in my life. So, like, it's super important to me. And it's more of like a finish line of like where I've been waiting for the next, because I wasn't old enough really to watch Jim Kelly, so it's like this is the dude for me.
Yeah, man.
He's finally here. We finally have the quarterback.
Hey, I feel you, dude. You know, it took a long time for my favorite team to draft a generational player like Victor Wembanyama. Like, I had to wait a whole 5 years of losing.
Listen, I was in stream when it happened, and I know so happy. It was so fun. I fear for the dog, though, because the dog probably had no clue what was going on, and you were just going crazy.
Well, yeah, he's a crazy dog himself, that Wimby. all right, everybody, we're rambling here. It's been a while since Adam and I sat down and talked, about a week since we talked. So always enjoy seeing you, my friend. Appreciate everybody tuning in, sticking with us here on episode 34 of the FTN Fast Break Podcast. I am back on Monday with Mike Randall, breaking down the weekend that was in the basketball universe. On your way out, subscribe to the channel, or if you're listening on audio, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Hope you had a happy new year. We'll see you back here on Monday for another episode of the Fast Break. Till then, he's Adam, and I'm Zach. Goodbye.